you would have heard me on this show over recent months cover the very, very big topic of the rental crisis here in Cairns. But of course, it's not just a crisis in our part of the world. It's happening right over the country. Someone with a national view, a bit of a helicopter view on this topic, homelessness, social housing, rental situation, is Kate Colvin. Now, she is a spokesperson for Everybody's Home. It is a national advocacy group. Kate, welcome to the King Review.
Oh, hello, and hi to all the listeners.
I was saying to you off air that the rental vacancy rate in Cairns, the latest that I've seen, is 0.7%. Absolutely crazy, but it has been very, very low in what real estate agents classify as crisis levels for many, many years. It seems to be particularly acute in recent months, though. Kate, you work across the nation. Tell us about other pockets of particularly regional Australia. Just give listeners a bit of context and a bit of comparison about how perhaps Cairns stacks up against some other parts of the country.
Look, vacancy rates below 1% seem to be the new hallmark of regional areas. So right up and down the East Coast, that's very common that there's these very low vacancy rates, but in a lot of inland areas as well. And what's happening as a consequence of that is that when people go to just change over their property, they need to move to a bigger property, or they're moving into the area and need to rent a place, well, they can find that they're turning up to rental inspections with 30 or 40 other households. And of course, most people in that situation miss out. And so it varies from being terribly inconvenient, you know, if it takes you weeks or months to find a place, to absolutely devastating with families, you know, pushed out into homelessness just because they can't get a rental.
Well, it seems, Kate, that every other week I read something on social media or mainstream media from, you know, families, as you said, through no fault of their own, have had to move out of their house. Now, maybe the property owner has moved back in, or they've sold it because the real estate market's running pretty hot. And so they are finding themselves literally on the brink of homelessness, people who never thought they would be in that classification. What are you seeing in other parts of the country? Is it the case that homelessness, I guess not in the traditional sense that we would think of homelessness, is on the rise?
Look, absolutely. And homelessness, as you say, among people who really the only problem is that they can't afford rents in the current market, or that they're bumping up against a situation like really low vacancy rates where they're competing against lots of other households. And so sometimes I think it feels like there's always someone who, you know, is more appealing to the landlord than you. Like the landlord might choose the double income professional couple over the tradie with three kids because they think, oh, well, this professional couple will look after the property better or something. I mean, that's not always, you know, the case, but in a really competitive rental market, I guess landlords can pick and choose, and people then just, you know, it's very competitive. It's a bit like musical chairs, and people are missing out.
So that is the problem. And I think listeners certainly of this show will be well aware of the problem and those crisis levels, people being forced into homelessness who've never been in that situation before. But Kate, very keen to talk to you about what are some potential solutions. What do you want, or what does Everybody's Home, what would you like to see the feds and the state government do to tackle this issue? Because it feels like there are no answers, certainly not from politicians.
Yeah, so what we're calling on both the federal government and state governments to do is invest in more social housing, because what the real challenge is that there's just a shortage of rental properties that low and middle income households can afford. So putting affordable housing, social housing properties into the market means that there'll be more choices when people go looking for a rental. There'll be a better match between the number of people looking for rentals and the number of rentals that are available. And the reason, I guess, that we need governments to invest in social housing rather than just the private market doing it is because land prices have got so high that there's just not a profit to be made in someone purchasing a piece of land in an expensive coastal area and then renting it to someone who's on a low income. So they'll always end up renting it to someone who's on a higher income, and the person who's on a low income misses out. But every community needs to have people who are on a low income, because every community needs the supermarket workforce and the aged care workforce and the childcare workforce. I mean, these are workers that are critical, but they're not very high paid.
What type of shortfall are we looking at, particularly in our part of the world, when it comes to social housing?
It's very hard to catch up. The shortfall of social housing is really significant. So, for example, in the electorate of Leichhardt, you know, there's a need for social housing of 5,300 properties.
And wow.
In Kennedy, 4,000 properties. So that's a really big ground to make up. A couple of states have stepped up and done more, but the federal government are not stepping up to do more. So they're doing the same as what they've always done, which is not enough. And if the federal government was to partner with the states, well, then it would double whatever effort the Queensland government can make and deliver those extra properties into the market. But the other thing that a federal government can do, which is sort of fits much better with a federal government than with a state government, is potentially provide incentives for superannuation funds to invest in social housing, or for private investors to invest in social housing. And that really involves subsidies that possibly come through the tax system but are directed to social housing. You know, that's another thing that we're not seeing the federal government do, and which would, you know, really make a difference.
Well, you bring up a fairly pertinent point for me anyway, is that governments aren't developers. They're not house builders. And so one of the problems, I think, certainly in discussions that I've had around the traps about this topic, is that, you know, the states and the feds don't know how to partner with the private sector to make up some of that shortfall, because you do need the private sector, in my view. You do need the private sector, the expertise, some of those cost efficiencies to deliver social housing that is, you know, it's affordable for governments to do. It's done in a timely manner, and hopefully it's done well. Is that not a problem, in that, you know, governments don't quite know how to partner with the private sector to do the type of thing that you just spoke about? Whether that's incentives or whatever, in whatever shape that collaboration looks like.
I think that there's always this search, particularly by the federal government, for the magic pudding, you know, that idea that you can create something from nothing and just keep creating the something from nothing. And there's been research after research after research released, which shows that to build social housing, it really does need a subsidy, and that subsidy can come in the form of the simplest way, where government just says, well, it'll cost us $400,000 per social housing property that we develop, and here's 100 lots of 400,000, so, you know, go out and build it. But the other way is for them to provide an ongoing subsidy to a private developer to you know, an incentive to build that housing. And look, we had the National Rent Affordability Scheme a few years ago that was shut down. The scheme wasn't perfect in every way, but it did deliver social affordable housing properties into the market. And so I guess I'd say it's not that that governments don't know how to partner with the private sector. It's just that they've not been willing to bite the bullet on that very important element, which is that it does take a subsidy. There's no way of doing it that doesn't cost some money. And so, you know, I think sometimes we have a very short-sighted approach of that, of thinking, oh, well, it costs money, so we shouldn't do it. But for every family that's housed rather than homeless, you've got a family who's able to participate in work rather than not be able to participate in work, and a family who's growing up, you know, healthy, as you do in a house, rather than all of the perils and damage to health that comes when
the
people
stress,
are forced to move around,
and
stress and anxiety, and also kids who are forced to move from pillar to post, you know, move from this school to that school to the other school, and of course, as a consequence, don't do very well. So there's lots of benefits of people in the community being well housed in terms of labour productivity and educational outcomes and health and all of those benefits, which ultimately cost a lot less than the cost of housing.
Well, we need to keep pushing the agenda, because as you said, those numbers in here in Leichhardt and Kennedy, my God, that is insane. For nearly over 9,000, you said, 9,000 on that waiting list?
Yes, well, it's not exactly on the waiting list. That's a social housing shortfall which measures the numbers of people who are homeless and in housing stress.
Mm.
But to look just at the numbers who are homeless, in Leichhardt we've got 2,400 people, and this is at the last census, not the one we just had, the one previous. And so that includes people who are in overcrowded dwellings. And I think often in remote communities, there is a lot of homelessness that's in that overcrowded dwelling situation.
Mm.
And in Kennedy, 1,900 people homeless on census night. So those are very high rates of homelessness for communities that are not as heavily populated as other.
That's right.
Areas. So yeah, it's very concerning, and it has really long-term impacts on the community. So the community would be, of course, much stronger if people were well housed.
Yeah, well, it's a massive issue. It'll be very interesting to see when the latest census results come out to see where those homelessness levels are at. So very, very interesting to keep an eye on. We'd love to catch up with you again, Kate Colvin from Everybody's Home. Thank you for your time on the King Review today.
Thank you.